This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك سريع العقاب وإنه لغفور رحيم صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that he might try you by what he has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and he is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The U.S. is ratcheting up threatening rhetoric over China's military and economic cooperation with Russia. The UN says more than 700 civilians, including 52 children, have been killed in Ukraine since Russia's offensive began in February 24th. And a U.S. military base north of the Iraqi capital Baghdad comes under rocket attack. No reports of damage or casualties. Hello everyone, and thank you for tuning in to World News. Our top story, the U.S. says China will bear responsibility if it supports Russia's military action in Ukraine. Washington says it's concerned Beijing is considering directly assisting Russia with military equipment to use in Ukraine. U.S. is also concerned China could help Russia evade economic sanctions imposed by the West. The U.S. President Joe Biden is set to speak with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping by phone later Friday. Biden will make clear that the U.S. will not hesitate to impose costs if China backs Russia. That's according to Secretary of State Antony Blinken. China has denied plans of military assistance to Russia. Latest developments follow heightened tensions between Beijing and Washington over a host of issues, including trade. Political commentator Andrew Lang says it's unreasonable on the part of the U.S. to detach Russia and China because Beijing and Moscow have strong ties now more than ever before.
There is no way that the United States can decouple China entirely from Russia, because before this war, both China and Russia have been pushed together by American aggression, sanction, into a marriage of convenience. Even though the two countries sometimes are rivals in certain areas, but they are pushed much closer together than before, because there is a huge complementarity between the two economies. And Russia's entire dependence on energy, and is a major food producer, and that meets China's very needs. So I think that it's not reasonable at all. Because this for the United States to force China to detach from Russia entirely.
Now, more than 3 weeks after the Russian offensive in Ukraine, a top UN official has called on the Security Council for a thorough investigation into the deaths of civilians, including children.
Between 24 February and 15 March, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights recorded 1,900 civilian casualties. The total consists of 726 people killed, including 52 children, and 1,174 injured, including 63 children. The actual number is likely much higher. Most of these casualties were caused by the use in populated areas of explosive weapons with a wide impact area. Hundreds of residential buildings have been damaged or destroyed, as have hospitals and schools.
The World Health Organization chief also said there have been 43 attacks on Ukrainian healthcare, leaving a dozen people, including health workers, dead. He called such attacks a violation of international humanitarian law. Russia's envoy to the UN has denied reports that Russian forces are targeting civilians, including claims that a theater in the city of Mariupol was shelled. Vasily Nevenzia blamed Ukrainian nationalists for the attack. Mariupol and several other Ukrainian cities are under siege as fighting continues. Heavy fighting is also underway near the capital, Kiev. In a town near the eastern city of Kharkiv, local officials say artillery fire killed over 20 people and injured more than two dozen others. European Parliament has discussed ongoing Ukraine crisis amid calls from Kiev for stepping up arms supplies. That's while EU lawmakers are divided on whether the West should intervene directly in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
There is consensus at the highest political and military levels in the West that closing Ukraine's airspace to Russia would likely trigger World War III and potentially result in a catastrophic nuclear war. Despite this, many EU legislators suggest it's time for NATO to become directly involved in the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
Unfortunately, our good friends from Washington, they were too afraid. They were afraid that they are triggering the war. But I can't imagine where we're going to trigger the war. Europe is in the war already.
But a debate on the subject in the European Parliament on Thursday heard calls for peace rather than further intervention.
I don't think this war can be won militarily from one side, and therefore it is essential that we do all we can to ensure there is a ceasefire.
According to some experts, the conflict will become protracted as both sides are very unlikely to back down.
Ukraine is not going to give these things to Russia. I mean, President Zelensky has talked about this neutrality issue. That's one thing. But when it comes to actual territory and the other things that Russia is asking for, I mean, this is just non-negotiable.
Via video link, the Ukrainian defense minister, Alexei Reznikov, told MEPs that more than 3 million people have fled his country so far. Many nations have simplified visa regimes in order to assist, he explained.
Unlike other countries like Israel, for example, that actually made it more difficult for our refugees to unite with their families in Israel, I was very surprised by that.
During this debate, the governments of Spain, Bulgaria and Turkey were heavily criticized for not fully backing the West's anti-Russia agenda. In recent debates here, lawmakers who support Russia have been demonized. At present, it appears, any form of balance on this subject is unacceptable to most. Jerome Hughes, the European Parliament, Brussels.
Another attack on bases hosting U.S. forces in Iraq. Several rockets have been fired into Al-Balad Air Base north of the capital, Baghdad. The Iraqi security media cell affiliated with the prime minister's office says four rockets fell in open areas in the air base. Says attack left no damage or casualties, and no group has yet claimed responsibility. American military convoys, as well as their bases in Iraq, have come under frequent attacks over the recent months. Such attacks have increased amid rising anti-American sentiments in the country. And those sentiments grew after the U.S. assassinated Iranian and Iraqi anti-terror icons Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in January 2020. Iran says the U.K.'s overdue debt to Tehran has been deposited in Iran's treasury and is not being withheld by the Swiss government. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Saeed Khatibzadeh says Iran was able to retrieve London's debt after more than 40 years of intense negotiations and despite the British government's obstructionism. He said Tehran managed to reclaim the rights of the honorable people of Iran after decades of unreasonable resistance from Britain. Khatibzadeh said debt was related to incomplete Pahlavi regime tank purchase deal with the United Kingdom, and the British government had used political issues as pretext to avoid repayment. Earlier, Iran also said the UK repaying this debt was in no way related to the case of two prisoners who were released on the basis of Islamic leniency and humanitarian considerations.
Their return to British soil, like their period of incarceration, a media event of the highest order. British Iranians Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe and Anousheh Shouri touched down at Bryce Norton Air Base in the early hours of Thursday morning. Both had been jailed on espionage charges in Iran. Their release comes after months of delicate negotiations and culminated in their freedom, according to a statement from Iran's foreign ministry, on the basis of Islamic leniency and humanitarian considerations. In what has become a media firestorm, much has been made of Britain's repayment of a historic debt to the Islamic Republic.
The Islamic Republic has consistently rejected any links between London's repayment of a decades-old debt and the release of the British Iranian nationals, despite attempts in Western mainstream media reporting to conflate the two issues.
We received the money a few days ago, but simultaneously the judicial process for the release of these two persons was going on. Maybe chronologically, their release and the deposit of the money were close, but there is no connection between these two issues.
UK Foreign Secretary Liz Truss had previously spoken of making the repayment of Iranian debt a priority.
I've also been very clear that the debt that we owe Iran is legitimate, and we are seeking ways to pay that.
The release of the two dual nationals is the culmination of years of talks between London and Tehran, including a political revelation by then Foreign Secretary, now MP Boris Johnson, that Zaghari Ratcliffe was not a charity worker, as was widely stated.
He admitted, didn't he, at the dispatch box that she was employed by Reuters in training journalists. And as I've said, that is a classic tactic that's used to, develop assets in nations that you know, Britain has hostilities towards. So, in that sense, I think, he let the cat out of the bag. And obviously we know now that, an agreement's been reached and she's been released. But, I think that did reveal that there was a lot more to this situation than we were being told by the corporate media in this country.
Both Zaghari Ratcliffe and her employer, the Thomson Reuters Foundation, had maintained she was simply visiting family while on vacation. A third person, Murat Abbas, has also been released but remains in Iran for the time being. Amina Taylor, London.
The UN Security Council has adopted a resolution to secure formal presence in Afghanistan amid deepening humanitarian crisis there. The Norway drafted a resolution includes several strands of cooperation, namely on humanitarian, political, and human rights fronts. Norway says motion is crucial to respond to the immediate humanitarian and economic crisis in Afghanistan. It says the resolution will also result in peace and stability in the country. Now, the Afghans have been experiencing decades of fighting and U.S.-led occupation, and the country is gripped by an economic crisis after many countries cut off financial aid, and the U.S. even froze assets following the Taliban takeover last year. Security situation appears to be stabilizing, but a UN estimate shows more than 23 million Afghans are facing acute hunger. People across Afghanistan celebrate the birth anniversary of Imam Mahdi, the 12th Shia Imam. They also call for Islamic Brotherhood and solidarity among Muslims. Ramatala Baghban reports from Kabul.
Mid Shaban is one of Muslims' great eids, marking the birth anniversary of Imam Mahdi, the 12th Shia Imam. Afghans gathered here at Sakhi Shrine in Kabul to pay tribute to their last Imam and celebrate the occasion.
I congratulate Afghans and other Muslims on the birth anniversary of Imam Mahdi. This is a joyous Eid for us and we have come here to celebrate it. Prophet Muhammad has promised the advent of Mahdi and we are eagerly waiting for that day. May he come and fill the world with justice and peace.
Fortunately, here everything looks great. People are happy celebrating Mid Shaban. As an Afghan, I mark the birth anniversary of Mid Shaban every year, but today it's different. More families have come here since the security threats are gone.
Kabul residents decorate the Sakhi Shrine and hold traditional ceremonies, announcing their allegiance to Imam Mahdi. They also take the occasion as a chance for highlighting Islamic solidarity among Muslims. At the same time, the Taliban say they will tighten the security during the Eid.
God willing, we have tightened security everywhere. We are serving all people of Afghanistan and don't let anything or anyone threaten them. Today, people can mark their occasions without trouble.
People in Afghanistan have been struggling with poverty and hunger crisis. In the meantime, they don't miss any chance to mark cultural occasions and to spread Islamic bliss. People have come here for the love of their last Imam, Hazrat Mahdi. They observe Mid Shaban as a great Eid and hold such ceremonies every year. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Iranian city of Kermanshah has hosted performers and cultural activists from across the nation to celebrate Nowruz. Nowruz Festival marks the arrival of the Persian New Year, which coincides with the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Cut away this gigantic mountain to get to your love. It was an impossible condition set by the 6th century Iranian king Khosrow to dissuade Farhad from marrying Shirin, his love. But the enchanted lover accepted the daring offer and used his sculpting axe to dig through Mount Bisotun. But halfway through, Farhad heard the sad news that King Khosrow had already married Shirin. This tragic love story still echoes in the Iranian city of Kermanshah and Mount Bisotun, which is now hosting visitors from across Iran to celebrate the Persian New Year, known as Nowruz. Bisotun is just one of many historical sites in Iran's western province of Kermanshah. Anahita Temple is equally significant. The historical monument was constructed back in the 4th century BC to honor the goddess of water, Anahita. And in the heart of Kermanshah lies an amazing stone arch called Tagh-e-Bostan, which dates back to some 2,400 years ago. What made it even more attractive is music performances by local ensembles who sing and play the tambour instrument to ring in Nowruz.
Happy Nowruz to all Iranians. Today our group played the tambour, an old Iranian instrument that is 8,000 years old. We hosted music bands from other parts of Iran and enjoyed their performances.
Kermanshah was the second stop for the caravan of Nowruz, comprising cultural activists from across Iran, who took part to welcome the Persian New Year, due on March 21st. The caravan set out from Hamadan, got here in Kermanshah, and will move on to Sanandaj, all to display Iran's cultural diversity. That's the result of peaceful coexistence of many ethnicities in the country.
Nowruz is celebrated by over 300 million people worldwide, with each nation having its own unique style in marking the occasion. Now, these people say Nowruz is a time to celebrate these differences, as they make the ancient festivity one of the most ethnically diverse cultural events in the world. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Kermanshah.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
On Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou alone, who has no associate nor any equal. And thy word has no failing nor any change. And that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans. And muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Birthday of Imam Mahdi, the day of the oppressed. In the name of God, the All Merciful, the All Compassionate. Salam, everybody, and heartiest felicitations to you all on one of the most auspicious occasions. Today is the 15th of Sha'ban, which was preceded last night by one of the most blessed nights on whose morrow was born one of the most radiant persons to grace planet Earth. Yes, it is the birthday of the promised savior of mankind, who after a fairly long period of occultation will reappear in the end times to cleanse corruption and oppression from the world by establishing the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. To be more precise, today is the birth anniversary of Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, the 12th and last infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The 15th of Sha'ban has aptly been designated by the Islamic Republic of Iran as the Day of the Oppressed, since the awaited Redeemer of humanity will deliver mankind from ages of oppression and exploitation by ending once and for all the rule of tyrants of all shades and colors. Stay with us for a special program in this regard. As we said, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, is the 12th divinely designated heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. He is the son of the Prophet's 11th infallible heir, Imam Hassan Askari, peace upon him. He was born in the city of Samarra in Iraq in the year 255 AH, corresponding to 869 AD. He was 5 years at the time of the martyrdom of his father by Mu'tamid, the self-styled caliph of the usurper Abbasid regime. At this tender age, in the manner of his grandfather, Imam Hadi, peace upon him, and great-grandfather, Imam Muhammad Jawad, peace upon him, he was entrusted by God with the universal message of Islam. There is nothing to be surprised about this in view of the fact that Prophet Jesus spoke about his mission, his being granted a heavenly scripture, and about his mother's chastity while an infant in the cradle. This is evident by ayahs 30 to 32 of Surah Maryam, the same surah in whose ayah 12 God informs us of having granted wisdom and book to Prophet Yahya or John the Baptist while still a child. By the will of the all-wise God, the 12th Imam went into occultation or qibat at the start of his imamat. This period is known as Qaybate Sogra, or minor occultation, because of its short time span compared to his second and much lengthy occultation that followed and which continues till this day and is known as Qaybate Kobra, or major occultation. During both periods of occultation, the Imam was in contact with his close representatives. Denominations of Muslims, whether Sunni or Shia, believe that Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, will return in the end times to fulfill God's promise as Al-Qa'im, or the Great Revolutionary. All Muslims, whatever their denomination or the jurisprudential school they follow, believe that Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, is the Prophet's direct descendant through his only surviving daughter, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her. All Muslims are also unanimous that Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, is the offspring of the martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, whose innocent blood he will avenge. It is to be noted that the concept of the savior of humanity is not specific to Islam, but is found in all religions, which means that there could only be the one and same redeemer of mankind, that is Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, and not several other persons. Another important point to note is that according to the authentic narrations, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, will reappear as a young man, despite having lived for over 1,000 years. So how can this be? Is it possible to live for such a long period? And can he live long yet not age physically? Let us clarify the answers to these questions on the basis of the ayahs of the Noble Quran and authentic hadith. Iran's Dr. Yahya Jahangiri, who is a professor at Hoze, or Seminary of Holy Qom, points out that in the Noble Quran, we come across the account of Ashab Kahf, or Companions of the Cave, a group of some 7 persons who during the era of the pagan Roman Empire in the period after the end of the mission of Prophet Jesus, peace upon him, had sought asylum in a cave in the mountains of Levant or Syria in order to escape persecution. They fell asleep and woke up 3 centuries later. we find ayahs of the Noble Quran stating that upon awakening from their sleep, the companions asked how long they had slept. Their answers circulated around ideas of half a day or one full day. They were surprised when later Almighty Allah revealed to them that they had been asleep for 300 years. They were amazed at this and left the cave to find out for themselves. They witnessed the changes that the city had undergone and realized that they had indeed slept for much longer than they thought. They came to understand the truth in what Allah had told them, as stated by Ayah 19 of the Surah of Holy Quran titled Kahf. Ironically, though, the changes on their appearance reflected their hypothesis of being asleep for only one day or half a day. The changes in their surroundings demonstrated that they had been asleep for over 300 years. Though this was all impossible for them to understand, they believed when they saw it for themselves. Thus, although the world around them had aged for 300 years, they had only aged for one full day or half a day. Iran's Dr. Yahya Jahangiri then points out that the Noble Quran also mentions the account of Prophet Uzair, or Ezra, as he is known in the West. When Uzair was passing a destroyed village where apparently all people were dead, he asked Allah on the process of resurrection. Allah asked him what he was holding in his right and left hands. He suddenly fell asleep, and when he woke up, Allah asked him about the duration of his sleep. He responded with the same answer as the one given by Ashabe Kahf. That is, one full day or half a day. The apparent changes on his body indicated that he had only slept for as long as he had guessed for. But Allah told him that he had been sleeping for 100 years. He asked Allah how was this possible and how, despite the time frame, no changes had taken on his body. Allah reminded Prophet Uzair to keep his patience. Allah then inquired about the condition of his food. Prophet Uzair looked over the food, and judging from its condition, he thought it must have been only day or half a day. Interestingly, the freshness of the food, despite the passing of a century, in contrast to the donkey which had turned to bare bones during this lengthy period, before being revived by God, demonstrated two different time frames. This portrayed the notion that there must be more than one form of recording time. During the days of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, people would ponder over the concept of time and aging. For instance, once Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and some 7 decades later, the Prophet's 16th fallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, were both asked in regards to Imam Mahdi, peace upon him. The replies given by them were similar, that Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, will reappear as a young man. In addition to Imam Mahdi's good manners and excellent intellect, the Prophet of Islam also described the physical characteristics of his 12th heir in great detail. These descriptions are so detailed and explicit that when he reappears, people will be able to immediately recognize him. as the people of the book, that is, the Jews and Christians, had recognized Prophet of Islam on the basis of what they had read in their holy scriptures regarding the advent of the greatest ever messenger with the universal creed of monotheism. Ayah 146 of Surah Baqarah says of this fact of recognition of truth as well as their mischievous efforts to hide it. Dr. Yahya Jahangiri of the Qom Seminary says that this ayah is also a figurative reference to the recognition of Imam Mahdi, peace upon him. When he reappears, people will recognize him in the light of the descriptions given by the Prophet, as they recognize their own sons. But despite this fact, some people will still deny him. The various hadith narrated from the Prophet of Islam say Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, will reappear with Prophet Jesus, peace upon him, and they will face Dajjal, the Antichrist, and annihilate this misleader. There are several hadith detailing the morale of Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, and the activities that he will engage in. In short, the attributes of the Imam of the Age are clearly outlined and done so with the purpose of his easy recognition. For example, the Prophet refers to marks on the body of the 12th Imam, such as a mole, as a sign, and likens these to a leaf, a pearl, or a star. His complexion, hair, beard, color, stature, build, the general outline of his face, the shape of his head and forehead, and features such as his eyebrows, nose, and teeth are also mentioned in the astounding detail. Contrastingly, according to narrations, we find there will be people who deny the mission of Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, when he returns due to the time and age paradox. However, by analyzing the Quranic ayahs and hadith, we understand the possibility of this phenomenon. These indicate how different changes can take place in one event. The main idea here is the preservation of time and its control. What we must understand is that Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, has been given the titles of the timeless Imam or the Imam of the time, Imam Zaman, Wali Asr. These attributes indicate that time is in his hands by the will of all-wise Allah. The long occultation of Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, is therefore a test and trial for humanity to correct their beliefs, to overcome their doubts, and to shun the disobedience of the laws of God so as to be immune from the divine wrath. Unfortunately, the tyrants, blinded by power and wealth, have continued to oppress and exploit humanity. This is the reason these deviant elements try to deny the concept of the Savior, while some of them have drawn plan to confront Imam Mahdi, peace upon him. The Abbasids had shuddered at the thought of his return and had launched a manhunt to discover his whereabouts, but to no avail. This proves that no propaganda of the faithless, no plot of the tyrannical powers, no ploy of the hypocrites, and no treason of the takfiris can confront what God has already decreed. The one promised by God, foretold by the messenger of mercy, and expected in all religions as the deliverer of humanity, will indeed reappear when the world would be brimming with violence, bloodshed, treachery, and all sorts of injustices, as the trend of events of our times indicates. He will make his advent at the Holy Kaaba, the symbolic house of the one and only Creator. He will stand between Rukne Yamani and Maqam Ibrahimi, the station of Prophet Abraham, and call five times for redemption of justice. Before his reappearance, Arabia will have been cleared of filth of godless Wahhabis, especially the ruling Saudi Najdi family of brigands with Jewish roots, who are masquerading as Muslims in order to destroy the spirit of Islam through their collaboration with the US and the Zionists, and their open enmity with the followers of the Prophet's Ahlul Bayt. Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, will have as his lieutenant Prophet Jesus, peace upon him, who will reappear and disown Christianity, which means most of the Europeans and Americans, having rid themselves of the despots in the White House and the Zionists, would by then be God-fearing believers, receptive to the universal mission of Islam, as preached by the 12th Imam, whose mother was a spotlessly pure lady, Narges, a granddaughter of the Byzantine Emperor and a direct descendant through her mother of Simon, one of the 12 disciples of the virgin-born Messiah.
Congratulations to everyone on 15th of Sha'ban, the birthday anniversary of the Imam of the Age, Abu Saleh al-Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance. We hereby at Arabi English Radio congratulate all Muslims on the occasion of 15th of Sha'ban, the birthday anniversary of the 12th Imam, Al-Qa'im al-Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance.
Midstream.
Sarcasm, bitterness, and anger, social media activists launched a hashtag titled The Caliph of the Muslims after Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the Israeli President Isaac Herzog in Ankara. Many considered the warm reception of the Turkish president in Ankara a massive fall for the Muslim president, who has long chanted in support of Muslim causes in the East and the West. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who was presenting himself as the Caliph of Muslims who wanted to revive the Ottoman Caliphate and restore the glories, warmly embraced the Israeli guest and considered the visit a historic one. This is a new page, Erdogan said, in the relations between his country and a racist terrorist entity that occupies sanctities and works to obliterate its Islamic identity in Palestine. This visit came after a 13-year boycott following the massacre perpetrated by an Israeli commando unit against Turkish activists who were on board the Marmara Flotilla, which was on its way to break the siege on the Gaza Strip, leading to the death of 10 people. Today, millions of Arabs and Muslims are disappointed after they were deceived by President Erdogan. Their admiration peaked when he shouted at Shimon Peres in protest of his lies, saying at the Davos summit in 2009, "You are murderers and criminals who master the process of killing innocents well," then proceeded to collect his papers and withdraw from the meeting. Little did these Arabs and Muslims know at the time that he would later embrace Isaac Herzog, the son of a member of the terrorist Haganah gang and the head of an entity that practices terrorism and racism in its worst forms against a people Erdogan claims to support their cause. Many of us already saw that President Erdogan lost a lot of his credibility when he led the project to destroy neighboring Syria and send his forces to occupy a large part of its lands along with Iraqi lands and use the weak Syrian refugees as financial bargaining chip with the European Union and then recruited large numbers of them as mercenaries to fight in Libya and Azerbaijan and now in Ukraine to support the American-Israeli project there. I personally do not understand how millions really believe that President Erdogan would lead the Islamic world against normalization and the Zionist occupation entity when economic trade and military alliances with Israel not only remained as is, but rather increased over the past 10 years. He did play it well when he threatened to withdraw the Turkish ambassador from Abu Dhabi in protest of the so-called Abraham's Peace Accord and the UAE's reception of President Herzog. But now, since he laid down the red carpet for Herzog, hugged him affectionately, and promised new and improved relations with Zionist Israel, only fools will believe his support for a free and democratic Palestine. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the president of the Israeli enemy Isaac Herzog in his palace last week with a robust and warm reception after what looked like a political estrangement since 2008. Various contexts and attempts have been made to heal the rift in the relationship between the two sides. Although the push towards reforming the relationship was an Israeli one during the past 15 years, however, the recent Turkish keenness to normalize relations with the enemy and restore the impurities of the previous stage was predominant. What are the motives of the Turkish leadership to normalize relations with the Israeli entity at all levels? To discuss this issue with us from the West Bank is Mr. Saleh Abu Azzi, writer and political commentator from Jenin. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Saleh Abu Azzi. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who was presenting himself as the caliph of Muslims who wanted to revive the Ottoman Caliphate and to restore its glories, he embraced the Israeli guest and considered his visit a historic one. And he was hoping for a new page to be open in the relationship between his country and a very racist terrorist entity occupying sanctities and ethnically cleansing Palestinians since 1948. Why was that even a surprise to the Muslims across the world when trade and security ties never stopped between Israel and Turkey?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, at-tahiyya lakum wa liqanatikum al-kareema.
Greetings to you and your kind followers. Undoubtedly, just as there is a huge media machine led by imperialism and global Zionism, there is also a media empire led by the Qatari-Turkish axis. This media empire worked hard to brighten the image of Turkish President Erdogan and to portray him in the Arab and Islamic world, especially in the Arab world, as the protector of Islamic causes, especially the Palestinian cause. This depiction has been going on for more than 20 years. That is, as soon as the Turkish president came to power at the beginning of the second millennium until this moment. All throughout, this media machine worked hard to brighten his image according to populist slogans. in addition to great support from the activist, cultural, intellectual, and religious scholars movement. We know that this group has real strength in the Arab and Islamic street. This made Erdogan a symbol and icon in accordance with the Brotherhood's promotion campaign and the Turkish-Qatari one. This resulted in an obvious contradiction at more than one stage of Erdogan's rule in Turkey. First, when he withdrew the ambassadors after the Marmara Flotilla massacre in 2010, and now with this latest visit by Herzog took place. This was reflected within the narrative led by the Turkish-Qatari Brotherhood media. We saw two contradictory narratives.
Well, Mr. Saleh, what you're saying is very, very important, but despite the ongoing trade and military ties that is going on between the two sides, we did hear the Turkish president express his desire now to cooperate with Israel in the framework of a project to extend a gas pipeline in the eastern Mediterranean so that it supplies from what he refers to as Israel directly to Europe through Turkish territory. Now, Israel had already signed the East Med pipeline with Cyprus and Greece. Would Israel be willing to risk this accord for signing another one with Turkey?
The issue of the Mediterranean gas is the most important regional issue in the Turkish-Israeli relationship, after which Erdogan tried to demarcate the maritime borders with Libya to block the agreement you referred to between Cyprus and Greece. There was even a presence of the Palestinian Authority, Jordan, and the UAE, with the Israeli entity along with Egypt within the Mediterranean Gas Forum. Now Turks and Erdogan have found themselves outside this equation on the one hand, and on the other hand, the United States is a major supporter of the Mediterranean Gas Forum led by Israel and Egypt. Therefore, Erdogan wanted to crowd out this forum by building bridges of relationship with the Israeli entity first. And because this is an important point for Turkey, that the stolen Palestinian gas from Palestinian lands and Palestinian waters be transported through Turkish lands toward Europe. But will Erdogan's effort succeed in this regard? I believe that Israelis who stated previously in January 2022 that Tel Aviv's relationship with Ankara will not in any way affect Israel's strategic and solid relationship with Cyprus and Greece. The power sponsoring this relationship is the United States of America. Erdogan realizes that the relationship with the Israeli entity is a key to Biden's approval. And the second point is that Erdogan also realizes that the gas project will not take place with exclusive Turkish-Israeli approval, as long as there is American sponsorship of this agreement, so that Cyprus and Greece do not suffer injustice from their share of the gas that is intended to go to Europe, which, by the way, is a stolen Palestinian gas.
Exactly, Mr. Saleh, this is what I want to talk about, is that this is how the Turkish regime views it. But the Turkish people, or most of them for that case, they cannot accept for their country's government to become a broker for the stolen Palestinian gas. How do you think the Turkish public will reflect their will given this new Turkish-Israeli rapprochement?
Erdogan came to power with the votes of the Turkish people when he played the economic card. He will continue to play this card, especially as the Turkish lira continues to collapse against the U.S. dollar and the deterioration of the Turkish economy after the corona pandemic. Now, the story that Erdogan will present to the Turkish people is that he wants a strong economy for Turkey, and for Turkey to remain within the G20, especially since it fell in 2021 to be number 21 after it was ranked number 19 in terms of economic strength. On the other hand, the Turkish opposition deals with two narratives with the Turkish people. The first narrative supports the economy, and the other contradicts Erdogan's approach. The Turkish people realize that the bickering over the nature of Turkish-Israeli normalization is strictly between the regime and its opposition. I believe that the Turkish people completely reject normalization, and this is what appeared during and after Herzog's visit to Ankara, where demonstrations took place in Istanbul and other Turkish cities rejecting this normalization because the Turkish people belong to the Islamic nation, its projects and concerns. But on the other hand, whether pro-Erdogan or opposing him, they both will work for the Turkish economic interest with Israel. So there will be no real change in the upcoming elections in Turkey, whether Erdogan wins or the opposition wins.
Definitely, we have to wait and see in 2023 what will happen with the internal elections inside of Turkey. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Saleh Abu Azze, writer, journalist, and political commentator from Jenin in the occupied West Bank, for joining us to discuss this issue. Now, please stay tuned, because what we will be talking about next is the 8th-year war on Yemen.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The dramatic Yemeni progress in the 8th year of the war tightened the noose around the kingdom's neck and changed its priorities from fighting against the entire axis of resistance in the areas of regional influence to withdrawing to the Saudi interior geography. The steadfastness of the Yemeni people led the kingdom to retreat from its previous challenges. However, retreating does not mean changing the goals, but rather changing the priorities for Riyadh, which seemingly has recoiled to preserve the security from within its own borders. The shift in the balance of power and the deterrence equations drawn by the 8th year of the war, the year of decisiveness, according to the Yemenis, enabled Sana'a to move from defense mode to a gradual, ascending, and unprecedented attack. More details in the following report.
The Saudi vision of getting out of the war in Yemen is inseparable from the mentality with which the campaign began 8 years ago in March 2015 with what was called Operation Decisive Storm. A mentality based on superiority and domination, far from the goals of wars and drawing clear applicable strategies, is still in force despite the track of 8 years of absurdity. The decision-makers in Al Yamama Palace in Riyadh have linked their fate to the outcome of the war, as they are on the cusp of a 9th year with no viable range of options for the initiators of war in sight. At this stage, the Saudi-led coalition of aggression has two options. The first, to continue the war. This means more attrition with no prospect of winning. This also means a direct threat to the Saudi and Emirati inner borders, which will have political, economic, and external repercussions on the regimes there. The second option is ending the war through a political settlement. This will also have major repercussions, because any settlement will be the product of failure and a deadlocked horizon politically and militarily. If this kind of settlement takes place, it would be the direct result of the victory of Sana'a, and therefore the latter will impose its conditions on the negotiating table. The most important of these conditions is the refusal to touch Yemen's national sovereignty. Hence, the previous equations presented to Ansarullah as having at least 5 or 4 components, which were completely rejected by Sana'a during the stages of steadfastness and defense, will obviously not be acceptable in the current stage of resistance and confrontation, dubbed by the Yemenis as the year of decisiveness and attack. What remains as a constant since the start of this war is that the power to immediately end the war on Yemen lies with Washington, which still sees in the continuation of the war its interest on more than one level, particularly in the field of arms sales to Saudi Arabia, or in terms of weakening Yemen and keeping it away from the axis of resistance. However, Riyadh is stunned to oblivion with how things have developed in the 8th year of its genocidal war on the Yemeni people. After it was hoping for the imminent fall of Sana'a, it was forced, facing the gravity of the challenges, to beg for direct protection from Washington, which sent thousands of its soldiers and seemingly a failing Patriot air defense systems in exchange for billions of dollars paid in advance. Sana'a's success in maintaining the unity of the ranks, the most prominent of which was its prior success in preventing the forces of aggression from penetrating its internal fronts. Perhaps one of the most prominent features of the response stage is the technical development in the areas of ballistic missile production and bomber drones, as well as the accumulation of military experiences. With this transition, Sana'a succeeded in drawing a line between the strategy of years of confrontation, steadfastness, and strategic patience to move into the final year of decisiveness.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Yemeni activist and media persona Msa Ali Ad-Darwani. Thank you very much for being with us, Ms. Ali. Now, in the war waged by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates on Yemen, the challenge to Sana'a has turned into a serious threat to both Riyadh and Abu Dhabi and the rest of the cities. With time, this threat grows even darker and deadlier for both capitals. Now, Riyadh, under the current objective conditions, is no longer able to dictate its own terms inside of Yemen. How do you assess this shift in power on the 8th anniversary of the brutal Saudi-led war on the Yemeni people?
I would like to thank you for having me on your show and thank your followers. During 8 years, there have been great changes and transformations that were not imagined by Riyadh. Riyadh